Recording in progress.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Mike.
What do we got here? All right. The usual suspects.
Usual suspects.
Hey, Bob, Mike.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Ron.
Hi, hey. Ron.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Bob.
How have you been? Are you working on your automobiles, your cars?
Well, not much. Oh. Watching my grandkids.
Oh, that's nice, though.
Mark, is Miss Johnson going to be on the line today?
No, she can't make it.
Okay. But we're going to be announcing her then?
I may mention the name. Yeah.
Good.
We'll before the next meeting, or she will be. I'll announce some information about that oversight coordinator.
Perfect. And I think, Mark, we ought to put that information from the court on our website. If up to you.
Okay, I'll have a discussion with Lisa.
Yep. It seems to be public and people are circulating.
Hey, Kat.
Good morning.
Yeah, this is public.
Morning, Joyce.
Hi, good morning.
Sending you love.
How are you?
Is that Miss Simeona aboard?
Yes, it is.
Our condolences. And welcome.
Good morning, Judgetown. How are you today?
Good morning. Well, sitting up and taking nourishment.
This is good.
I've been raising chickens for 40 years, and one of them has decided they want to be part of the family, but which doesn't make my wife happy.
Well, they want to be inside.
No, they come into our kitchen.
Oh. Oh,
there's Nathan Hale. Hey, Nathan.
Hi, good morning. Good morning.
Welcome. Where are you calling from? Phoenix?
Arizona, yes, Phoenix.
Oh, good. Well, I kind of told, even though I've never met you other than right now, I've told our chair, Mark Patterson, a little bit about you.
Oh, great. Well, it's an honor to be here.
Nathan, what's the name of your church? The Desert Anglican? What is it called?
No, that's actually a different Nathan Hale in Sunny Slope.
Okay.
That's a Pastor Nathan of Desert Anglican, I believe.
Oh, I got it wrong. Okay, there's two of there can't be two of you.
There's two of us in the same area.
And you're on staff at the Prison Fellowship?
Yeah, I'm a field director over Hawaii.
Good for you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hey.
Morning, Eric.
Morning. Mr. Sakai, it's nice to see you. How are you?
good morning. Good to see you too. Well, hear you anyway.
I can see him.
I'm here.
Hey, you guys all behave, because I invited Nathan from the Prison Fellowship. I told him how classy you are. No need behave.
Thanks for the invite today.
It's public, but you don't need an invite, but it's nice to be invited. It's a ministry of invitation.
That's great.
When are you going to be here next, Nathan?
I'm just planning that. You know, we're looking at the scheduling, hoping to do something great for Christmas, but it'd be great to come in the middle of that as well if I can.
Well, let me know. We'll get you to the Wioli Bakery if you write that down.
All right.
The cooks and staff are all on furlough and parole.
All right.
And they can cook.
That sounds good to me. It was a blessing being there this past weekend. I wish I could exchange my weather. It looks like we're about up to 109 today, I think.
Well, I'm hearing catastrophically the homeless are unfortunately get very sick or worse because of 114.
That's the fact.
Well, good morning and aloha to everyone on this morning meeting of the Hawaii State Correctional Systems Oversight Commission. We got 21 of us here today. I believe there may be more, but for now, let's begin the meeting at the top of the hour. Just want to recognize and at this time, the presence of Judge Mike Towne, Judge Ronald Ibarra, and Ted Sakai. And on the Zoom at this point, along with me, Mark Patterson, and we have Martha Tornay would not be making it to the meeting today. So four of the five commissioners are here and present as we start this meeting. If you have the copy of the agenda as posted on the website, we can begin this morning's meeting with the testimony on the items on the agenda or related items. Let me see fit. And I'll take hands this time, digital or human. Thank you, Kat.
Aloha, everyone. I just have good news to report this morning. And that is that there are, for the first time, no girls at HYCF. And that is to the amazing work of Chair Patterson. So thank you very much. And I hope you can do the same in the adult system. Thank you.
Kat, can I add, at the judiciary at the law school, we had our access to justice. Ron Ribarra was there, and the governor, the chief justice, Della Al-Baladi, and they mentioned that this is a phenomenal thing. That's really a good thing. For those of us that believe in, and I think we all do, in restorative and transformative justice, zero girls, females. And so hopefully the school to prison pipeline has been interrupted, thank goodness.
I'll respond to that after, Kat. Hold on. Eric, go ahead.
Thank you.
So all Mark, these people, when I first jumped on, they were like,
go ahead, Eric.
Mike asked me to call in this morning in light of some events that are going on that I think some of you are aware of. In the past 10 or 12 days, there have been three suicides in the prisons, two of them successful. And we are already engaging in litigation. We have a class action lawsuit in federal court over the lack of mental health care and problems that have been leading to suicides over the course of the last several years. Recently, in a hearing that was bitterly contested by the Attorney General, Judge Kobayashi announced from the bench that she's going to certify the class that we asked for. We haven't yet received the written order. But then in the midst of that, we've received this news about these three additional cases that have occurred in very close proximity to one another. In addition to that, despite the fact that Judge Kobayashi is going to certify a class, the Attorney General unbelievably filed a motion for summary judgment. It's clearly a frivolous motion. In 50 some years of practice, it's the most frivolous motion I've ever seen. It's a disgrace given the nature of the problems and particularly given the most recent events. But the Attorney General has indicated they don't even want to discuss this issue. They're not open, and they've told that to the judges repeatedly, including the magistrate, to have any discussion to try to figure out what kind of mental health services can be provided or added to minimize the risks of suicide and serious harm to inmates in the facilities. And it is to me an utter disgrace. As a consequence of these events, we are now working as quickly as possible with a couple of other law firms who are now giving us added resources to file a motion for a preliminary injunction to have the entire mental health system in the prison turned over to and run by the court, because we don't believe that the Department of Public Safety has the desire or the will or the capabilities of providing adequate mental health care to people in the facilities. And we don't believe that the state is willing to provide adequate funds to see to it that inmates are properly protected in the state's prisons. That motion is likely to be filed as early as Monday, as soon as we can get it done. I'm very sorry about that, but I want to tell you that the utter lack of response from the Attorney General's office and concern, the utter lack of response from anybody in the Department of Public Safety in the face of these kinds of suicides is to me just simply appalling. And I cannot understand and describe any reasons why the department wouldn't want the additional resources to help them deal with these kinds of problems and prevent people from dying in prison. But that's the situation which we have. It's a crisis as far as I'm concerned. And I just wanted to report to you, if you folks can do anything at all to intervene in this situation, at least even demand that the Attorney General sit down and talk with us in the next couple of days over the weekend. I sent an email to Holly Shikati yesterday. She responded that, oh yes, we're concerned, but didn't offer anything in terms of being willing to even discuss it with us. I'm sorry that that's the state's position, because we don't really want to litigate these issues if we can resolve them in some other manner. But it does not appear that there's any other way to do that. So that's just a brief report. I'd be happy to talk about that or answer any questions anybody may have, but I understand you have lots of other things on your agenda.
Mark, I have a question. Okay, Eric, you mentioned three suicides in the past 10 days. I recall reading an article by Kevin Dayton about this, the most recent suicide at OCCC. Where, at what facilities did the other two occur?
Well, the other one, who is now my client, Jonathan Pico, died in Maui, had a significant history of mental health service problems. The third one, I don't remember, and we're investigating that, but that was the one who survived. I'm not sure what the status is of that case or all of the details, but that also was reported that there was an attempted suicide. I think it may have been at OCC, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Thank you.
And Eric, you were at the Access to Justice conference on Friday.
Yes.
And it was discussed that bail reform, the bail reform bill was discussed at the panel with the Chief Justice and with the governor, you know, and Della Al-Baladi. Personally, I hope that, or professionally, I hope that bail reform bill is signed or at least goes into law. But also the judges have to use discretion as well, Eric, is that you're finding the judges won't use discretion and not release or supervise release or do stuff like that to get these folks out?
It is my observation from lots of cases that the judges are reluctant to let people out because they feel the political pressure that letting people out is going to increase the risks to the public of exposure to reoffending. I have to tell you in all candor, the bill that emerged is really not an ideal bill, and I think it has lots of problems. I think it doesn't go far enough in some respects to be able to identify what really needs to be done to supervise people and to provide facilities and opportunities for people to be released from prison. But that being said, the fact is that there are many, many, many too many people in prison. They're not screened properly when they come in for mental health issues. And we have the problems that we've all been seeing and experiencing, not the least of which is very significant overcrowding. So I know that the governor and the chief justice and everybody is very concerned about that. I know the judges have been advised to do whatever they can to find alternative placements for people, but that hasn't been happening in any significant degree.
Okay, well, it's well said, because I know as a retired judge, first thing I do is try to look in the mirror. I don't always like what I see, and I don't want to overly gang up on public safety, but they're going to hold themselves accountable. But I appreciate what you're doing, Eric, and I appreciate your presence. Thank you.
Mark, I have another question for Eric. Melissa, another commission member has a question. Eric, you mentioned that you're requesting of the federal court that there'd be like a special master, so to speak, to take over the mental health system. If you're at liberty to discuss this, when you say mental health system, what are you talking about? Just the mental health providers within the correctional system? Because it can be a pretty broad thing that we're talking about. It would include correctional officers, other correctional staff, but it could also extend into the Department of Health and their ability to conduct examinations on a timely basis, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, all of that is of concern to us. You know, I mean, in COVID, we looked at all of that. And of course, we did get a preliminary injunction to get people into the prisons to try to assess the situation. I think they were helpful. You know, the Department of Health people tell us that they don't have the resources to do what needs to be done. Dr. Mitchell, who is our expert, tells us that the protocols and procedures that he wrote during a point in time when the federal government was involved in the prisons are adequate, but they're just not followed. The staff are not adequately trained to follow them. They don't have enough resources to fully screen people when they come in. And you still see too many instances of inmates being punished as opposed to treated, which leads to more serious problems. We don't have continuity between the state hospital, possibly because the new hospital is only partially functioning, if at all. But we have very wide systematic problems that need to be addressed to provide different kinds of placements for people and adequate supervision and treatment by people who know what they're doing. You know, I've been in touch with the medical staff, the people, the interns and residents from the medical school who work there and other people, mm-hmm. and all of them agree, except for what we hear from public safety, that they're not able to deliver quality mental health evaluations and provide timely services because the system is just not functioning properly. So it's a very broad problem. And I just don't see any capacity for the state to fix it themselves. Long ago in this Opulento, this class action litigation that we filed maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we offered to sit down with the state, bring in our experts, sit down at a table and figure out what we could agree upon that could be implemented that we could then go to the legislature jointly with for recommendations to fund. They refused to do that. They've consistently refused to even sit down and talk with us because they say there are no problems. But we all know there are problems. And so I don't know if that's a breakdown from the top, from the department. I don't know if it's the lawyers who are just simply inept. I don't know where it lies, but I know that the inmates and the staff are suffering from this as well. And I feel like we all have an obligation to provide the resources and deliver a better system of mental health care to this population because they're very much in need.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm going to go off video because I have internet connection problems. I'm trying to stabilize my connection.
Mark, I have a question for Eric. Mark? Hello?
Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, Eric, you mentioned this commission intervening in the lawsuit with the federal courts. You know, I recall at the time that the settlement negotiations was going on that I raised the issue of this commission intervening. But however, you know, that's passed. But I ask, while you folks are talking about, you know, the lawsuit, has anyone talked about bringing this commission in as a necessary and indispensable party, given our responsibilities under Act 179?
You know, I have raised that in every lawsuit that I have initiated with respect to the prisons. As long as this commission has been in existence, I have tried to involve the commission in discussions and in the litigation that we've pursued, because we'd much rather settle these cases than litigate them. But at all stages, the Attorney General's office has opposed having the commission involved in any cases whatsoever. And I'm not suggesting that you intervene in the litigation, because that's a problem for another state agency to do. What I am suggesting is that you try to talk to the leadership of the Department of Public Safety and maybe even the Attorney General's office and convince them that we should sit down and talk about these problems jointly with you guys present, as opposed to doing it through lawyers in court.
I thank you. I raise it because under Act 179, it's the one of the responsibilities of the commission is to investigate complaints at the correctional facilities. And, you know, I question whether after whether you folks settle in federal courts, whether this commission should pursue investigation and whether we are, you know, just going over what you folks went over.
Well, I leave it to you, Judge, to do what you feel comfortable doing and whatever you feel comfortable in terms of discussing with the state and the department as far as your role is concerned. I would love to see you folks have a much more active role in all of this, as I've told you on previous occasions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Ron. Just moving on in our testimonies, anyone else?
Mark, this is Bob.
Hi. Go ahead, Bob.
thank you for recognizing me, Mark. And I understand that Diamond Simeona Agu's mother, Joyce, is here. And Joyce, I'm sure everyone on that's here this morning extends their condolences to you and your family. It was a heartbreaking picture that we saw on Civil Beat of all of you on the grounds at Queens Medical Center. And so you have our deepest sympathy. I agree with basically everything that that Eric said and share his sense of outrage about what has happened and is continuing to happen. And I agree with the litigation approach. I would just suggest that maybe we need, in addition to the litigation approach that Eric is spearheading, that the commission itself has the opportunity right now to do a lot to start building, finding out what's going on and getting some answers. And in that vein, I would suggest that within the next 2 or 3 weeks, that you schedule a special meeting to explore this issue of suicides in the prison. Because and related issues, and among the related issues, I noticed this morning in that the Diamond was being held on $5,000 bail. If she had $500 to give to a bail bondsman, she would have been free. But we have a system that doesn't allow poor people to go free, even when they're not dangerous. And that is one of the reasons she was in the jail. The other reason is one I do not understand. Prior to her suicide, her public defender had asked for a psychiatric exam because she was apparently, it was clear to a bunch of people that there was a question whether she was even competent to proceed. The judge granted that motion. And why, after granting that motion, was she continually held in OCCC? Why wasn't she moved to the state hospital? Why wasn't she given medical care? Because there was a judicial finding that she was suffering from an acute medical problem. She's not even competent to take care of herself. And yet we left her in prison under the care of ACOs who we know cannot deal with people who are severely mentally ill. They aren't trained to do it. They aren't competent to do it. And this is the Joey O'Malley situation all over again. And I think it has to be addressed quickly. Number two, I think we have to, the commission should look into the absurd process of the Department of Public Safety doing its own investigations. The commissioner saw last month at your meeting, Pablo Stewart and his take on some of these mental health issues. Pablo Stewart, his testimony in the Joey O'Malley case was, among other things, that the internal affairs report on the Joey O'Malley suicide that was approved and accepted by Warden Harrington was an attempt to cover up serious staff errors and omissions that any competent investigator would have identified. So you all are on notice that the process of investigating these events is not just bad, it's a cover-up, and you need to address that, and you can do that right now. You need to look at the policies. I understand that they are pretty good, but you need to look at the training and why aren't these people trained? You need to look at whether the people who are being trained are really understanding and comprehending what's going on. Once they're trained, you have to look at why aren't they being supervised and monitored? And so we have some sort of oversight to make sure that the policies that are in effect are being followed. Why do we have cover-up investigations? And why isn't there any accountability for the people who are responsible for these people, for the inmates, when they do things like this? There just doesn't seem to be any accountability whatsoever. So I just think there's a lot of things that you can do. I think you need to get the people from public safety who are responsible before the commission. I think you ought to devote a whole day to this if that's what's needed. That you ought to, if your coordinator is not capable, you ought to recruit someone either pro bono or pay them an attorney to start the questioning and to prepare for this, to get the documents. And you ought to start having really serious hearings and you ought to invite the legislature and maybe shame the legislature, because why is it when we have this thing going on, this epidemic of suicides, and it's the second time in the last 4 years we've had this big, huge cluster of suicides all at once, and we have the public safety committees in the House and the Senate doing nothing, and you ought to invite them to participate with you or to do it themselves for something. But I just think there's a lot you guys can do as commissioners, and I think you must do it because that is your responsibility under Act 179, and I don't think you can sit idle any longer on this suicide issue. You have to act, and you have to act boldly and decisively. And I hope you will do so. And I'd be happy to join you in any effort that you're going to you make to get to the bottom of this and to do something from the community side while Eric pursues the legal side, because we need a multifaceted approach to address this incredible problem before more people die. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
By the way, Mark, I think Carrie Ann wants in from the waiting room. She's always welcome.
Okay. Thanks again, Bob. And sorry, Mike, I was in listening to Bob and not paying attention to the screen.
Go ahead, Carolyn.
I was just pointing you out, Kat.
Can I say something, Mark?
Yes, Kat, go ahead.
Jumping off what Bob said, one of the things that has always been a conundrum for me is how, when policies change, that is translated to the line staff. And how do they know that things have changed and what kind of training accompanies those changes? So I think that's something that the commission can look into, because this is really becoming an epidemic. Thank you.
Okay. Carolyn, were you finished?
I hoped to point out that Kat was raising her hand. That's
okay.
All.
Okay.
Thank Mark, you, Carolyn.
Mark, Jennifer Merkel has had her hand up for a while.
Okay.
Aloha. My name is Jennifer Merkel, and I recently retired. I was with the Federal Bureau of Prisons for 25 years. I worked at FDC Honolulu for 7 years when we held a number of state inmates. And I just wanted to follow up on something that Commissioner Sakai had mentioned. The federal system works very differently from the state. I did have the opportunity. I've toured many of the institutions on this island, so I'm familiar with how the state runs. When you're dealing with situations like Eric has raised, I have concerns about bifurcating out one segment of the system for assistance, because frankly, you're never going to have enough psychologists or social workers or counselors available to make suicide prevention a reality. This is a whole system issue, and everyone in the system has to be a part of it. So I really wanted to stress, I think Commissioner Sakai was kind of hinting at it, that when you approach these systems, we have to recognize all the individuals that participate. These are closed communities. And just like in the real world, it takes people from all different areas to be supportive and to be on the same page. Maybe a teacher will recognize someone is depressed or something along those lines. And so as you approach this, if you do decide to conduct some sort of formal analysis of how the system responds to suicidality among the inmate population, I would strongly recommend that you not hyper-focus on specifically the provision of mental health care, because that is not necessarily where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. It takes a whole community to come together and support the inmate population. And thank you for allowing me to comment.
Thank you, Ms. Merkel. Appreciate that. Is there anyone, Ms. Yomiona, did you want to have a chance to say something?
Yeah. Hi, Mark. How have you been?
Good, good.
Well, as everybody know, I'm Diamond's mom, Joyce Simeona. I just wanted to emphasize that there's a lot of abuse too going on in the walls, of the jails and prisons. And, if the counselors and the ACOs were more caring, and we'll just listen to the inmates, there will be less gang fights, less abuse, less neglect or whatever, My daughter, she comes from a very loving family, as Mark knows, because I was with Mark in his prison for 8 years. And, my kids was affiliated with a whole lot of things up in there. And, I don't know whether it was suicide or it was a strangle or what, but there's got to be changes that needs to be made within the prison walls. And, I just want some answers and justice in all of this for my daughter. That's all I have to say. And thank you, Kat Brady, and thanks, Kevin and Max Otani, for being a big blessing for the Simeona Gu family. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ms. Simeona. And there is a place in my heart, as you shared, in my memory of your children. Yeah, and the opportunities we had to bring them and you together. And so there's when it was brought to my attention that they were all part of Kids Day, and that. It brought some tears to my eyes, Simeona. But I just want to tell you that we're from my position, we're going to see this through with you, okay? And we're going to look at what can be done. And you know me from a long time. And
yes.
I'll
been a very good warden.
Yeah, I'll be there. Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
All right.
And this is Diamond's sister, Faith.
Hi.
Yeah.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you, you guys.
Yep. We'll be in touch. Thank you, Ms.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Let's if I don't see no more hands, let's move forward on the agenda at this time. I'm going to make a real quick announcement. It was unfortunate that she couldn't be with us today. We're happy to announce that our oversight coordinator will be starting next month in July. Her name is Kristen Johnson. Yeah. And for a lot of the things that we were just talking about within the last half hour, she comes with us with a lot of oversight experience. And before I go on into that real quick, all three applicants, and I can't share who the other two that were recommended to the governor were exceptional. Yeah. And so we would have been happy with any one of those choices. But for now, we'll uplift Ms. Johnson, who's moving in from Michigan, where she ran the Office of Oversight and Public Accountability in the state of Michigan. She also, at a time in her career, sat on the Board of Corrections in New York and was responsible for oversight and monitoring of Rikers Prison. Yeah, so she comes with a lot of investigative background, ombudsman experience, and we're looking at being very, very informed, as there's no doubt that she has more experience in the commission in terms of oversight, and she comes prepared to teach as well as initiate the true oversight that everyone in the community has been waiting for. So we're excited for her to start. And in the next meeting we have in July, she will be part of the meeting, if not leading it itself. So that's the announcement we have at this time. It's a momentum period for the commission after 2 years of operating with no oversight coordinator. So thank you everybody for helping us to advocate for the position, for the funding, and so that we can really get her involved in a lot of the discussions that we are currently having at this time. So that's our announcement on the oversight coordinator. I'm gonna move on to item number three regarding the COVID update from the Department of Public Safety.
Mac, I gotta adjust my camera.
Thank you, Max.
Okay, real quickly, these are the numbers as of yesterday. So we had active cases at HCCC, 7 inmates, KCCC, 4 inmates, MCCC, 7 inmates, OCCC, 31 inmates, Halaba, we have 2 inmates, WCCC, 1 inmate, Wayaba, we have 17, and we have no positives at Saguaro. So we have a total of 69 active cases as of yesterday. As far as staff, we're dealing with a total of 20 active staff throughout the department. We have no hospitalizations and no deaths to report. As far as the booster update, at cumulative, as far as the final dose, it's up to 3,655. We've administered 1,327 first round boosters and 88 second round boosters. And these are just in-state totals. As far as Saguaro, a cumulative total of 931 fully vaccinated, and we administered 680 boosters so far in Arizona. Mark, as I told you, we have a conflict as far as meetings today. So we probably going to be signing off in about at about 9:45 today. You have any other questions regarding item three?
So is your vaccinations a booster on a regular basis by if the offender chooses to get one?
Yeah, it's part of medical. They, you know, if they wish to have boosters done, you know, they can easily sign up and get the booster shots at this point.
Is it the same for testing for COVID?
COVID is done on a voluntary basis. We cannot force testing with the inmates. Normally, if detection is suspected in a certain area of the housing, we'll try to get mass testing done for that specific area of the housing area.
Do you see, and this may be a hard question, I don't expect you, when we have recently, since COVID has kind of, we kind of went back to normal, we've had spikes in the positives in the community. Has your system followed those spikes out of curiosity?
Yeah, follow is correct. When we see, you know, community spread going up, you know, we also see the virus coming into our facilities. You know, we're projecting that we're going to see a lot more positive cases within our facilities, maybe for the next week or so. And, you know, the projections are is that the community spread should be slowing down in the month of July, and hopefully that trend will follow with the facilities also.
Commissioners, any other questions for Max on the COVID situation? Okay. Give me a 1 second. Because of the, and I probably have the, I'm going to take the next 5 minutes, Max. And this is just me conversing as the chair of the Correctional System Oversight. And as I go in this direction, commissioners, if you want to chime in, it'll be good before public safety has to leave. But in light of recent events and some of the discussion that we've had during public testimony, it's really difficult at this particular point in time understanding, but how the commission will take its initial steps to address all the needed concerns that we just heard this morning. Yeah. But to begin with, Max, it's just going to be a statement from the commissioner to the Department of Public Safety in regards to the suicide trend that we are currently witnessing is really asking, are there, and you don't have to answer this now, but there needs to be accountability in the leadership within the department on these events. If these events are continually occurring, what leadership changes are being made in order for them to assure that these things are not going to be happening? Now, we understand that you have full responsibility over the whole Department of Public Safety. Tommy Johnson has corrections, but even under Tommy, there are specific responsibilities to positions responsible for the well-being of the facilities, and at the facility levels, the environment, and you can go all the way down to the administrators who are responsible for the shift work and the staff at that level. There are a lot of mid-level administrators who are responsible for the well-being and the safety of those environments for both the inmates and the staff, and who is being held accountable if we're seeing consistent issues arising time and time again. Now, there needs to be some type of documentation from the top all the way down showing that after every situation, instructions are given and training are given. There should be documentation showing that the director, the deputy director, the institutional division administrator, from the wardens to the captains, the chief of securities, that instructions are being given so that we assure that the policy and procedures are being accounted for. Yeah. We will be asking for those memorandums and those ICFs to say if we are responding to the issues when they arise. Yeah. Because if there is a feeling of no need worry, we're not going to lose our job, then nothing's going to be resolved. Yeah. So there needs to be accountability, and we need, and it needs to show at your level that accountability is being looked at. Yeah, we don't all, we always want to blame the correction officer on the bottom, but there's a lot of people behind him. A lot of people behind him that's responsible as well. So this is a statement, a lot letting you know that we feel that there is leadership accountability. Now, if we can go back a decade, two decades, and continuing suicides, and people have never changed, then the leadership is the issue. Your position is a governor-appointed position. You weren't there when the other suicides were happening, but other people were. So are we holding those people accountable for these issues and other issues within public safety? So that's one, yeah. Two, and I thank you, Ms. Merkel, for what you're saying, and this is to respond to what Kat said earlier. I am not responsible for zero girls incarcerated. That is a system change. That is the whole village change. That took decades. Yeah, and I can tell you from early 2000 how that began, that we have zero today. So that's not a Mark Patterson thing. That's a system. That's a village thing. Yeah, that was led by the judiciary and the Office of Youth Service long before I came to HYCF. So when we're looking at zero, yeah, because I'm going to be here and tell you that zero is achievable. If we're looking at zero suicides, that is a systems change involving judiciary, public safety, city and county, law enforcement, as well as the Department of Health and even Human Services. Yeah. How do we, so if we can hold public safety accountable for the safety and well-being of the environment, but that body being there is everybody else. Yeah. And so that is where we have to advocate as well. Yeah. And that's for the community. Advocacy in the system is just as important as advocacy against Department of Public Safety. And sometimes, and this is why I'm saying this, public safety has to take the leadership role in that. Yeah. We have to go out there and say, hey, you have to help us. Let's get together and let's talk about mental health coming through the system. Yeah. So that's where I'm at right now. Public safety, you don't have to respond. I know you're signing off. Thank you for your presence today. We'll have further discussions and we'll move on the agenda. I'll move on in this sense because number four, we talk about, I'm sorry. Commissioners, did you have anything else you want to say on that?
Mark, Mike here. I second what you're saying. I'd like to see the printable case view that came off of with Joyce's daughter. It's a public document. We've all been given to it. Maybe they could put it somewhere because when you read through it, you know, I get choked up a little bit, and we understand, but I want to prevent the next one and the next one. There shouldn't be any next one. So I look for zero suicides. And Joyce, I really miss Simeon. I appreciate you, your Manao, coming in and sitting with us, because you make us bolder and humbler by what you say.
Yes.
Thank you, Mike. Ron, anything? Just want to catch you guys before public safety signs off. Ted?
Nothing. Thank you, Mark.
Mark, I just want to say, and this goes along with your announcement that Ms. Johnson will be joining us, yes. I believe in early July, and she'll be available for the next meeting. This whole issue, as Ms. Merkel indicated, of we cannot just look at suicides, we've got to look at systems which lead to systems and processes and relationships and that eventually lead to an inmate to become come to the point where they feel that suicide is the only way out. And it's a very complex issue. It's not something we can go in and look at one case and make a determination. I think it's going to take a very systematic review. And investigation really entails, first of all, the gathering of facts. And I think I'm really pleased that Ms. Johnson will be coming on board, because she has the experience and the knowledge as to how to go about gathering facts in a correctional system, which it will entail going down to the facilities, looking at logs, looking at other documents, talking to staff, talking to inmates, et cetera, et cetera. So in that regard, just for the public, knowledge, the commission did send a letter following the last meeting to the department asking for various kinds of documents, which will serve as our basis for which on which Ms. Johnson can proceed. And I believe she's already seen some of this, and hopefully she'll be, she'll arrive, she'll make it a top priority. I think as Mr. Merce said, I think this is something that we have to do. You know, I know there are many, many things that are gonna press on us, but I think this particular issue is something that we have to address immediately. Thank you.
And this is important, commissioners, because you know a lot of what is being asked of us is a day-to-day job. You know, Bob, and I'm not giving up excuses, but I'm excited that we have an answer now, okay? Because this type of work and what is being asked of us needs to be done on a day-to-day basis. Yeah.
I agree, Mark.
And the fact that the oversight coordinator is coming, you know, and she's already been told that, you know, be prepared to run as soon as you set your foot on the ground, you know, because there's a lot to be done. And so I'm excited to know that, you know, it's frustrating sometimes to try to figure out at this particular point how we're going to support. And thank you, Bob, for those suggestions. They're really important. But it's exciting as well, knowing that we're going to have someone to lead us through this within a few weeks. Okay. And that kind of leads us.
Joyce, can you sit down? You're actually distracting me while you're walking.
To the next agenda item, which is basically right now with the law in the legislature, because of everything's really almost done, we're just waiting for the signing of the bills. I'm just going to bring this up right now. You know, we haven't submitted the letter that we promised to submit in the last meeting. Okay. So some of you have been emailing me and asking me. It's been kind of crazy. We hope we'll get that out today. And it's really, you know, looking at the issues as they fly back and forth in the media, you know, and I'm talking about HB.
Joyce, I told you to sit the fuck down. You're distracting me. Walking around the house all the time while I'm listening to my mother.
Sorry, I'm not
fuck sure. Fuck you, Joyce. Is. I'm listening to my friend Mark all the time and you're fucking distracting while talking. While walking, I mean.
I don't know if somebody's there.
Who is that?
I don't know.
My apologies. Okay, are we back?
That was very unprofessional to be speaking like that.
Sometimes I was told that you would get people who would bomb meetings. So sorry about that. Okay, so that's where we are in terms of our fellow commissioners, in terms of monitoring the legislation that are going on right now. We just have to submit that letter today. Really trying to look at from my perspective, everything that's going on, we have examples of reform already being conducted by the state systems and really trying to convince the governor that sometimes you have to have a legislative bill that will cause the catalyst for change. Yeah. And right now we're looking at HB 1567 the no cash bill as being that catalyst for the community to begin the correctional reform. And we're stating that under the mandate that we have from WAC 179 as a commission, from changing the punitive to a therapeutic model in our correctional system, that this bill will be the catalyst to launch us into that reform. And that's really the point of context I'm trying to get in the letter that I'm walking to Governor Ige. In 2014, Governor Abercrombie signed in Act 201 that the legislature invested in juvenile justice reform. And in 8 years, we're at zero girls and 16 boys. Yeah, that was a governor who just signed the bill, and the new governor came in and initiated under Ige, all the juvenile justice actions actually came to light. 8 years. Yeah, so we're looking at something similar with this governor going out at this particular point in time, being able to sign a bill that will cause catalytic change in the systems. Yeah, because what needs to happen is people have to sit down and have discussions. Yeah, it's too easy to dump on public safety. Yeah, what are the discussions needed prior to the incarcerating element that needs to be changed in order to cause reform in public safety? The success of HYCF is because of what happened before HYCF. All the alternatives to incarceration, all the diversion, and all the increase in community programming, yeah, by every system that's out there that caused a reduction within the correctional system. The same thing was done with the women when we were able to reduce the beds in order to bring the women back from the mainland. So that's where we are right now. I will promise to have that letter out by the end of the day, those of you who have been asking me. So any other comments on the legislative bills, commissioners? Okay. Ted, are we any discussion on the Oahu Community Correctional Center?
I was hoping to get some indication from the department as to what they see as the next steps for this project. Is it just going to lay waiting for an appropriation until next year, or are there other things they have in mind, or if they intend to reach out to the community for input? I think at the last meeting, Max had indicated that he has been working with an institution of higher learning for guidance on working with the community, but that's about all he discussed with us. So I was hoping to get more information about what they want to do with this and where they plan to go and how much involvement the community will have in the development of the, we all agree we need a new facility. It's the process and it's the size of the facility that we're very concerned about. And I think if we use the right process, we will be able to right size the facility. So that's why I asked for that to be placed on the agenda.
Okay. It'll probably be something that we'll continue to have on the agenda. And we may have to put things in writing to get, you know, a better presentation for July. We all understand that they had requested, I think it was almost $20 million, Bob, yeah, for additional funding to build the jail, and they were denied that.
Yeah, $15 million, Mark.
$15 million. And so at least the legislature is seeing some indication that, you know, they've already spent a lot of money on this and they want to have answers. And so I like to believe that the legislature heard the community in our call on this. And now it's just holding public safety to see, now that they have not have the money they needed to finish their planning, what are they going to do? You know, and so we can address that at our more in detail in the next meeting from a presentation from public safety.
Mark, let me add what I think about what the request for the $15 million was about. My understanding was they were requesting $15 million to develop the RFP. When you put out an RFP, what you're saying is we want to build a facility of X number of beds. So the beds are already set. And in this case, I forget the number, 1300 or whatever it was. And it doesn't mean that the plans are no good. It means that the particular plan needs to be adjusted. The whatever they have, they can still use. It's just that they've got to adjust their sites. And as indicated, they've got to work with the community. And we've actually been talking about working with the community for a year and a half now. But there's been no movement on that as far as I can see.
I believe you're right, Ted. It's just astounding that it takes $15 million to do that. Today's prices. Okay. Ron and Mike, you have any further comments on the new jail?
No, thank you.
Okay. You know, number six was a discussion of the mental health programs and restrictive housing procedures. And we Ted, you want to take a lead on that, or you want me to say something?
This is what we've been discussing. You know, I think we as a commission should come to some sort of agreement. I've voiced my concern. And you voice your concern about how this really needs to be a priority, but we need to establish that as a commission, that we're going to proceed. And when Ms. Johnson comes, tell her that this is a priority for her, and she needs to address it immediately.
Okay. Agenda six, commissioners, is really everything that I've said and that you've heard the community talk about during their testimony in regards to mental health program and their management of restrictive housing. There is no doubt in my mind, and you've heard it, that you know sound policy is in place. Yeah, it's enforcement that's the question right now. It's the assuring that the policies. It may be sound, but does everybody know it's sound? Yeah, and that's where eventually this discussion will lead, and the commission's investigative process will determine how these policies are being enforced and who is being held accountable. Yeah, so we've been talking a long time about the oversight coordinator. We're there. We're at the point there, and we're excited for that to happen. With no more discussion on item six, as we talked in parts throughout this meeting on that item.
Mark, I'd like to look at the policies again, because I want to know right from the get-go if they're talking therapeutic, restorative, transformative care for our PAHAL, because they are... We're in a fiduciary capacity, and they should be greeted and handled. As an example, Bob Mercer and I have discussed repeatedly, why do people have black and white prison uniforms at Halaba? Is that right, Bob?
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
And that is not therapeutic and transformative. It looks like something out of the Deep South, you know. But I just think we need to. I really want to challenge all of us to look and see if we're being transformative and therapeutic and restorative. I teach restorative justice, you heard me say, at the UH. And it makes sense to the law students, but then by the time they become lawyers, some of that wears off. So I'd like to do kind of an attitude audit on these policies, Mark, because I'm not convinced that they are transformative.
A lot of things are moving in the state right now, Mike. And as you talked about that, you know, last legislative session, the state put together a task force on trauma-informed care. Okay. This legislative session, upon recommendations of the trauma-informed care task force, they passed a bill creating the Office of Resiliency. that would be attached to the governor's office. Now, the task force and this off the task force was designed to look at how the state is implementing trauma-informed care programs throughout its systems and to make recommendations for change to create more therapeutic systems in Department of Health, Department of Education, Department of Human Service, and the Judiciary, et cetera, et cetera. The Office of Resiliency was created to assure that it was being done. Yeah, that's the theory of what's going on. I bring that up, Mike, because what you just said is from these two groups, hopefully, is the language that will be implemented into our policies to assure that we are on a roadmap of trauma-informed care. Yeah.
Well, well said. And Carrie Ann just wrote an excellent chat here. She could say it better than me about we have one chance to make a good first impression. We have to treat our prisoners, our inmates, whoever's there as customers, as valued people, you know, and we don't. Carrie Ann, do you want to add anything? Hate to pick on you. Actually, I like to pick on you.
Good morning, everyone. Carrie Ann Shiroto with the ACLU of Hawaii. Yes, I just wanted to comment. I came into the meeting late, so I was more listening and because I missed part of the conversation. But every time we talk about these piecemeal reforms, we are missing the bigger picture. And the idea that by just building a new jail, even if it may be more innovative in terms of its architecture, that in and of itself does not change the culture, that does not change the practices. And over the last 20, 30, 40 years in Hawaii, the only times that we've had really more systemic changes is when typically there's either media involved, when the New York Times published that our women were being raped in out-of-state private prisons, then there was pressure to bring them back home, when there was Department of Justice oversight, when the ACLU filed lawsuit years ago, the ACLU also issued a report on the conditions at the juvenile, which was echoed by the Department of Justice, and then lawsuits. And so it is really frustrating, right, for the community. We want to be collaborative. We want to get involved. But it seems as though, unless there is litigation, we do not have systemic changes that have resulted in sustainable changes. And that led to the Juvenile Justice Working Group to come together, judiciary, administrators, community, which is what we need. But what is it going to take? Because obviously, so many people have died in our jails and our prisons. From Maui to Oahu to Hawaii Island, it's continued. What people in out-of-state private prisons have died. And we have people in this meeting as we speak, right? People who are involved with the prison industrial complex who make money off of our people who are dying in our jails and prisons. And so I think that we need to talk about in even the first case, I'm so sorry for the lost Joyce of your daughter. What about diverting people from the very get-go? I don't know all of the circumstances, but if people who are pre-trial should be out in the community, all the money that's being spent on the beds to incarcerate people and further traumatize them should be invested into community-based services, divert them, get the support that they need on the front end of the system. Because even if we provide trauma-informed care just by removing people from their family and loved ones, that is traumatic in and of itself, and we have to do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie Ann. And with Carrie Ann's final statement, those statements, I'll open them up in our last agenda item for any more public testimony on what you folks have just heard.
Mark, this is Bob.
Go ahead, Bob.
I just want to comment in closing that today is really a dark day for all Americans because of the Supreme Court's decision regarding concealed carry. Hawaii being one of the states is most dramatically affected in that our laws that now prevent people from sort of wantonly carrying open their concealed weapons is really clearly unconstitutional. And people are going to be allowed virtually with no restraint to carry weapons in public, except in a few designated spaces. It's going to be a real problem for law enforcement because they're going to be assuming that everybody's armed, and indeed they might be. So, you know, we have some good news, Mark, that you and the village you work with have reduced the women's girls to zero incarceration. But gee, it seems like one time we solve one problem and another one just comes up. And this is another one that just deeply concerns me and is very discouraging as in terms of what this political Supreme Court is doing. So thank you all. And
thank you, Bob.
Look forward to talking more.
Any other comments from the floor?
Mark, I just want to ask, is the commission agreed that the first order of business for the coordinator when she comes, you know, after she finds her office, sets up her computer, that kind of thing, and finds where the facilities are, is to take a look at this issue of the treatment of the mentally ill in our correctional system?
Yes. Ron, okay, and just, Mike, you have any comments on that? That's a priority at this particular point in time, and it will branch off to other things, but that's the number one priority.
No, I agree, Mark.
I'm in agreement too. It just if they aren't in the facility and they're out and getting some therapeutic setting, then it makes it a little easier. But once they're in, it's what I call geriatric. The care causes the harm, or iatrogenic. Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, thank you for your time today.
Carolyn has her hand up, Mark.
Go ahead, Carolyn.
I just saw in the chat that one of the members of the public, Diana Bethel, commented about the new warden at WCCC banning books and radio.
That's something we can follow up to see. It's actually in the policy that they can have it. So, you know, we don't know if that's a miscommunication, or we can follow up to see at the with public safety whether or not they've changed the policies regarding books and radio.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Sass, did you have something you wanted to say? If not, July 21st at 9:00 is our next meeting, Lisa. And it's been a great meeting, guys. It's been a hard discussions. We know what the problems are, and I appreciate all of you being here and continuing in advocacy for what your heart and your passion is for the issues at hand. We continue to move on. July 21st is our beginning of our next meeting and the meeting of our oversight coordinator, and we'll continue to do what we do with our hearts and our souls. So thank you very much for being here. And we'll see
Mark,
you guys.
Will the coordinator be present, hopefully?
Oh, she will already be started work.
But she'll be on the Zoom then.
She'll be in Hawaii in July.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Aloha.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.